I did want to preface the very brief remarks by thanking, as I know we all do, the Vice Chairman of Judiciary. She has done an extraordinary job, and which, you know, and my chairman, the chairman of Judiciary, and certainly the chairman of HGO, and you, Mr. Speaker, for allowing me to serve on the inter-committee task force. It was an opportunity to watch democracy in action. It was, and especially I appreciate that you've allowed me to be on Judiciary these years. This was an extraordinary learning experience. I know that we've all received a lot of emails, and one email that I got at least stuck out in my mind from a lady in Rockville who had read the earlier version of the governor's bill, and then called me with some very acute observations, but she quoted to me a philosopher, and she certainly gave him credit. And after reading the governor's bill, she said, "If victory is told in detail, one can no longer distinguish it from defeat. If victory is told in detail, one can no longer distinguish it from defeat." And in politics, I believe, Mr. Speaker, the reverse of that is also true. What I mean is, and I say with all respect, that I think that each of us, all of us, have exaggerated the effects of this bill. Only to me in the surreal world of politics could enacting a ban on assault weapons that will produce 2 or 3 times more assault rifles than existed in Maryland before the ban be touted as a victory. It isn't to me. As a result, this ban will not have any effect for a generation. We all know that all of the weapons are going to be grandfathered in. We all know that none of the fingerprinting requirements, in my opinion, good prospective requirements, will not. No one will be affected if you are one of the 405,000-plus gun holders in Maryland. You're not affected, and nor are your 800,000 guns affected unless you go out and try to buy another gun. We all know that you're going to be buying guns. The state police said in January there were 14,238 gun purchases. They're not broken down between handguns and assault weapons yet. And in February, 11,625. We're going to go on until October 1st, when we're also going to be grandfathering in anyone who made a verifiable purchase order. Now, I know I disagree with my friends who are on the Second Amendment's side, but for me, instead of grandfathering in assault weapons, we should have been grandfathering them out. That brings me to my dear friends on the Second Amendment. Only in the surreal world of Second Amendment politics could enacting a ban that will not touch one of those 800,000-plus guns in Maryland and will not affect any of the 405,000 gun holders unless they go out and buy another gun. Only in that surreal world can that be lamented as a disaster of biblical proportions. You know, there is a huge hole in this law, which we've never discussed. I bring it up because maybe going forward someone will want to change it. We currently have 800,000-plus guns in the state of Maryland right now. And under the law, if you get convicted, and you heard about it, let's just talk convicted, of any of these serious crimes, disqualifying crimes, you're not supposed to hold the gun. But guess what? That provision is totally unenforceable. And you want to know why? Because we have 2 computers in the state, one run by the state police and the other run by another department of the state, and they don't talk to each other because one is biometric and the other isn't. So the fact of the matter is that if we could have put in no more than $300,000 in this bill, the governor put in $25 million for school safety. If we could have put in, $350,000, we could have created a program so that any time one of those individuals who holds a gun had been convicted of a disqualifying crime, we could have found out and the state police could issue them an order. Now, maybe that's something that my friends on the Second Amendment will embrace and say that's great. It's a huge hole, and we could have changed it, and we failed to do so. Finally, I want to talk about accountability because House Judiciary Committee has listened to these bills, as have many of you over the years. And there's a tendency to basically, we divide into two camps, and the camp that I'm in points the finger at the NRA and the others point the finger back at us. I want to say, Mr. Speaker, that I do not blame our failures in this area over the years on the NRA and our law-abiding gun owners, many of whom, in my opinion, confuse the right to own a gun with the right to own a weapon of indiscriminate destruction. I blame us, each of us. We are, for the many years that I've been here, have been collectively unwilling to do what was necessary and proper to make our society safe from the maw of assault weapons. For years, we have been, until late, unwilling to restrict people with prior violent histories, people who had been found guilty of terrible crimes, or people with dangerous mental illness from access to a firearm at any level. We've done that. We continue to do that by the inadequacies in this bill. In the eternal words of Walt Kelly's Pogo, we have met the enemy, and he is us.